Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience, those joining us in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, as well as those joining us online on the East Coast on Atlanta's 106liveradio.com, as well as those tuning in through our good friends at blogtalkradio.com around the world. We're really excited to welcome back to our program today award-winning author Leanne B. Wright. We're going to talk to her not only about her new book, Virtuous Deception 2, Playing for Keeps, but also what it's been like for her to be able to continue on her literary journey, the way to see that she's able to draw readers in, I think, from really, I think, all over the place, but also what she hopes you're able to take away from the new book as well. Now, if you're just now hearing about Virtuous Deception 2, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But, Leanne, hello to you, and welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Cyrus. Thank you so much for having me back.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine for sure. You know, I was saying to you before we went on here, you know, I finished the book last week, and I'll be posting my review on Amazon.com soon. And, you know, once again, what I will say something that I believe I said with the first book, Virtuous Deception, and that is that you've been able to write a story that really has so many different layers to it, Leanne. You've been able to kind of take us into the family aspects, the whole thing of trust, something that all of us have to deal with from time to time, but also the consequences of our actions. I mean, what has it been like for you already to be able to see the response to the book?
It's been amazing. It's been amazing. I was definitely hoping to produce something that people loved, and so far that's been the case.
Yeah, yeah. You know, did you go into Virtuous Deception initially, Leanne, knowing that there was going to be a second book? Did you know that there was more that you wanted to be able to write?
No, I didn't. When I first started writing Virtuous Deception, I intended on it being a standalone. Mm-hmm. I did not know that it was going to be a series, but by the time I got to the end of it, I just felt like the characters had more to say, and I myself was curious about what happened.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's that question is something that also drives us readers for sure. So take us back a little bit, Leanne. For those who may not have read Virtuous Deception yet, I don't know where they've been, but we'll tell them how they can get that book too a little bit later too. But, I mean, how did this journey for you begin? When did you first know that writing was that thing for you that you wanted to do?
Oh, I've always known. I wrote my first story, I remember, in second grade. It was about 3 wishes. It was a 7-page paper, college rule, front and back. And I don't know how I wrote that much story about 3 wishes. But from that moment on, I knew that it was something that I enjoyed. Writing has always been therapeutic for me. So it was kind of in the back of my mind. I didn't really think of it as a career to write professionally. I just wrote because I love to write. And the career just kind of happened. I like to think that it was just, you know, the universe kind of orchestrated that path for me because I hadn't really intentionally thought of having a career for it. But I'm glad to be able to do it, to be able to marry something that I love with a way to sustain a living. That's a wonderfully beautiful thing. So I just feel fortunate to be able to do it.
Yeah. I think the other thing for me, Leanne, with your books, especially I think with Virtuous Deception 2, is that the characters are us. I mean, we all know what it's like to, you know, we have heard that saying, be careful what you wish for, you know, or when you go looking for something, you're bound to find it. Your characters kind of, you know, are able to be a response to all the cliches that we have heard about ourselves, and they are able to experience the results of that. I mean, do you think that's been part of why readers like your characters? Because they do see not only pieces of themselves in them, but also pieces of the world that we live in today.
I do. I really try really hard to create characters that are relatable. I want them to be human. In my head, they're real people. Like, I know Michelle. I could talk to Brianna or Grayson or Frank or Peter. Like, they're people in my head, and I think that adds and lends itself to an authenticity that makes the narrative attractive.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I think the other thing about you, and I probably realized it with the first book, but it didn't really dawn on me as much as it did this time, was that your characters, I think, regardless of, you know, the race that we see portrayed on the cover of the book, I mean, can really be anybody. I mean, you don't write about things that are just for a certain group of people. Was that something that just happened, or was that also, you know, just part of your experience of realizing that all of us go through these things?
It was definitely something that was just part of my experience. The characters that I write are people that I know. And from what I understand about people and behavior, that it has more to do with how we grow up. That factors more into the types of decisions we make and the impressions that different events have on us, as opposed to our race, you know, or our ethnicity.
Right.
There are things that are culturally connected, you know, maybe this person would be more likely to have experienced this than this person. But overall, I think the part of us that is binding is the fact that we are all part of the human experience in general, and that really isn't specific to any particular type of person.
Right. I think that is so true. And I think, you know, that is, again, what keeps us turning the pages with your book. For those who are just tuning in, either on the Radio Dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. Award-winning author Leanne B. Wrights is back with us today. We're discussing not only her literary journey, but her newest book, Virtuous Deception 2, Playing for Keeps. It's out now, of course, through our friends at Amazon.com, both on Kindle, which is where I got it, but also in print as well. So let's get into the book a little bit, because this book, I think, really is about, as I said earlier, truth and consequences. Not really truth or consequences in this case. I think, you know, I believe that for some people, and I have felt this way, and I think this show has really taught me this, Leanne, that there is such a thing sometimes as too much truth. And I didn't used to think there was, but I now believe there is such a thing, because I don't think we need to know everything. But in your book, in Virtuous Deception 2, you know, there is this journey that Michelle goes on where she wants to know what she feels as though is the truth. Talk to us about that and how that kind of, you know, what kind of sparked that for you that kind of led her on this journey?
I think that Michelle is the type of person where the thing that keeps her sane, her safe place, is her inquisitive nature. That's kind of a protection mechanism for her. And so after everything calmed down in the aftermath, because that's, you know, in the first book, in Virtuous Deception, she was kind of the steady. Brianna was falling apart, but Michelle embraced their sisterhood, and she embraced the journey right away. And I think that she did because it was instinctive for her, and it made her, it's kind of a strength. And so when that part of the journey, when they find out who their parents are, and when that calms down, she's left with everything, with her life kind of in disarray. And so the only thing she knows to do to kind of keep going so she doesn't fall apart is to keep asking questions and to keep digging and keep searching. And as it did before, it gets her into trouble. I mean, like you said, sometimes we just need to stop asking questions and just try to take time to process what all is that's available to us. And she really didn't give herself time to do that because she's feeling very isolated right now. And so the journey is, she's married herself to this idea that the truth is the most important thing in her life. Like, she has to know that's going to, I don't know if she thinks that that's going to give her some sort of peace, or that's going to help her to better able to accept all the changes that have happened. She needs to be in counseling, like Brianna personally, but.
Well, you know, another character that surprised me, let's talk about Sophie and Armand for a moment, because, and for those who haven't read the book yet, you definitely want to just, and I'll talk around this, Leanne, so I don't spoil anything for anyone. But there's a great line in the book that you gave to Sophie to share with Armand, and I think it's something that all of us can remember. This is what Sophie said to Armand: "I don't know what you did, but you're not beyond redemption. None of us ever are. It isn't too late to make this right." I think that's an interesting thing. I personally believe that. I've always said that I believe, you know, if as long as there's breath in your body, we all have an opportunity. But what was it like for you to have Sophie deliver that message to Armand, not really knowing fully what Armand had done, but realizing it for herself, that the words she was saying to him was something that she realized for herself too?
Yes, and I think that that's why she needed to say it, because she needs to believe that. She knows that her past is catching up to her, that her decisions are catching up to her, and she has to believe that it doesn't mean that everything is going to be over, that it doesn't mean that she's ultimately going to lose more than her family, more than her girls, but that she's going to lose herself and the concept of who she is. Because I think down in her heart, she believes she's a good person, and she's not making a lot of great decisions that support that theory, but I think that she still needs to believe that. And so at that point, she is speaking to him because I think she recognizes his brokenness, and she's kind of tiptoeing that line because she also has him to credit, you know, for her relationship with Brianna. So she's wanting to encourage him and encourage herself at the same time.
Yeah. I think that is the thing. And I think, you know, there's so much betrayal throughout the book. But, you know, there is also the idea of, you know, can there always be forgiveness? And I think that is something that Armand has to deal with early on when he is literally caught in the act of betrayal in one sense. But I think also throughout the book with the other characters as well. Is that also part of the fun for you, Leanne, seeing how readers can either justify the actions of certain characters you've written or at least try to understand why they did the things that they did?
It certainly is part of the fun for me. I want to really humanize people. We judge people off one action all the time. We see one moment in their lives and we've coined them. And what I wanted to do with these characters is really show that they're just people, you know. They can maybe they did make a horrible decision, but the reason for it has to matter as well. And I wanted to keep turning that on its head over and over and over, because I feel like that at the end of the day, we all have to decide. I'm like, okay, so can I love this person anyway, even though they did this horrible thing? That it's about the honoring the true nature of acceptance and unconditional love and really challenging what that means.
Right. And I think that is the thing. There's also the idea that even Armand realizes in betrayal the importance of family. The line that you wrote was, "Family was precious, and he sincerely regretted ripping into hers, talking about, of course, Michelle's, as he did." You know, I think, you know, there is this whole idea of how we see family. And what is the realization when it comes to family? I mean, we all like to say family is, you know, that's where everything comes together. And but we all know, I know in my own family, that is not always the case. That is, you know, sometimes that's when you find the most drama is in family. Is that kind of the funny conundrum of this book, too, that in the place that you should feel the most at peace and feel the safest is the very place that you find the biggest turmoil?
Yes. Yes, it is, and that was, of course, intentional as well, because I feel like that's more true than the opposite. And what I also wanted to show is that even in the midst of the turmoil, there can still be joy and love and some sort of healing that can happen, even as the pain is happening. And especially for, you know, you mentioned that line with Armand, you know, he's always kind of understood how important it is to have your family, because all he had was his mother. And when he lost her, it changed him in a profound way. And that's not in any of the books. So that's a freebie. So when he realizes what he's done with Michelle, because he's known her for all this time and he's known how she is. And so I feel like he really, really feels bad about it. And it's not just him understanding and looking and realizing how important family is, but Michelle is kind of looking at it too. She's been looking at it. And I think that it's been difficult for her because she doesn't really feel connected anywhere right now. She's kind of like the buoy out in the middle of the ocean, where she feels like she's surrounded with people who she should feel connected to and supported by, but she doesn't feel anything. And she's trying to find ways to facilitate something or to find the why she doesn't feel anything. And she's kind of coming up empty. And I'm sure in that moment he's thinking about all of their arguments previously before that moment happened. And I hope I'm rooting for him, kind of.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We can't finish this segment, Leanne, without talking about Frank and Jacob. Another powerful scene that you wrote in the book. And again, of course, the remembrance that for some they will do anything, for family. Talk to us about the dialogue, because, I mean, one thing that you are good at, I'm not just saying this because I also consider you a friend, but because it's true, I mean, you're good at kind of bringing us in through this dialogue that seems real, it seems authentic. I mean, what was it like for you? I mean, there was nothing physical, there was not a physical altercation between these two, but there was a very intense verbal altercation between Frank and Jacob. What was it like for you to kind of create that back and forth with them about family and how it seems as though for some they never seemed to get it?
It was exhilarating, honestly. I love doing those types of scenes. It's really emotionally, it gives me an emotional charge. And so I had to really, go into Frank's head and be in this space with him and think about what he's feeling, because I feel like he wanted to, to fix things with Jacob, because on one hand he did know he was wrong, but at the same time he doesn't feel wrong. And Jacob, their relationship is so interesting to me. The first time I wrote it, I let my husband read it, and he was like, "This isn't how men talk." So I had to go back, and I was like, okay. So he just gave me a few tips on what to change, and I was like, okay, this is it. It felt authentic. I felt like you really got where both men were coming from, their perspectives. You have these two men that have this very kind of, it's an aged friendship, but it's been a emotionally volatile friendship that neither has really addressed the violent nature of it until this thing happened. And so now they're both having to confront it and trying to hold on to their friendship and speak their truth at the same time. And it was really exciting. I was like, oh my gosh. And I don't know.
Well,
I don't know how,
yeah,
Frank feels now. I'm like, I.
Well,
was,
that
was,
brings up this question. You said at the end of Virtuous Deception that you felt as though, even though you thought it was going to be a standalone, you were curious. Did you find yourself still curious after Virtuous Deception 2?
Yes. I am. I feel like I need to, I need for them to reach a peaceful place, a real place where they can start anew. And right now, I still feel like they're in the middle of their story.
I had an interesting question. I'm sorry, Leanne.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I have an interesting question for you. You don't have to answer this, especially if it's going to give anything away. But I was curious myself about that when I was prepping for this. Do you feel as though someone has to die in order for them to get it?
That's a great question, Cyrus. Honestly, I think maybe. I don't think that, because I felt like Lewis, that the way that he passed and that would be enough, but there was still, mm-hmm. like it didn't sink in still.
Right.
So I think probably someone does, that we all need something sometimes that is something that jars, something that's unexpected, that hurts us in a place where we have to deal with the raw emotions, or we can't,
right.
we don't even have the energy and the strength to put up a front or create something that doesn't exist. We just have to be wherever we are. And once they're in that place, then I think that they'll find tools to communicate and move from there.
All right. So something for us to think about for sure. For those who have not read Virtuous Deception 2, you all are definitely in for a treat. Again, Virtuous Deception 2, Playing for Keeps, is the new book by Leanne B. Wright. It's available through our friends at Amazon.com. And Leanne, how can our audience stay connected with you and keep up what's coming up next for you?
I am very active on social media. So you can look me up, Leanne B. Wright, and you can also check out my website at LeanneBWrights.com.
All right, so make sure you're all staying connected with Leanne. And Wrights is Wrights. So make sure you guys are looking up the right Wrights there. And we've already tagged Leanne both on Facebook and Twitter to make it easy for you all to find her there. Leanne, always a great conversation, as I knew this one would be as well. Congratulations to you on the new book, and looking forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you, Cyrus. We got to do it.
All right, then, for sure, for sure. And we thank your audience for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late and you're joining us online and you missed part of the conversation with Leanne, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media sites. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. We always thank all of you for tuning in, no matter how you're joining us today, whether it's through our radio affiliates at WYAD 94.1 FM or on the East Coast through Atlanta's 106liferadio.com. We appreciate you being able to choose us as your source for great conversations, no matter who our guests are. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.